Go for it.
So this is an interview by Kay Hardy, interviewing Kevin McIntosh at St. John Street for the No Fit State Archive Project on the 18th of May 2015 at about 2 o'clock. Hi.
Hi.
First of all, can you introduce yourself and say your name, please?
I am Kevin McIntosh, or Kevin Mikhail John McIntosh, and I'm one of the performers sometimes here in Norfolk State Circus. I'm freelance, but I'm also one of the circus tutors here.
And can you explain, can we go back to your first involvement with No Fit State and how that came about?
First involvement was by word of mouth, like most things that I seem to do. I was in the last year of my university degree. I was doing a BA in fine art, specializing in painting, and like what happens to most people when they come to the last year, you start to get a bit stressed because you have deadlines. One, you're stressed because of what you have to do when you leave, and two, because while you're in the system, you have to deliver your dissertations and your end of year's things, and so everyone has a little bit of distraction from what they're studying while they're still studying. So mine's ended up being circus. So Sarah Smith and another girl called Beth kidnapped me to go down to a Skillshare in Norfolk State. So you pay £1 or something, maybe it was 50 pence at the time, and there's no teacher. Someone shows you something and then you show the next person. And so I started doing general juggling and aqua balance stuff. Yeah, just as an escape, so I don't burn out in my last year of university, really.
So what sort of year was that, remember?
I don't know, 2009? Yeah, 2009.
So was that when you kind of caught...
Oh, no, not 2009, not sorry.
Not
1999. Sorry, got the two in the wrong place.
So quite a while ago. So yeah. The last year of university. So was that really when you caught the circus bug?
Yeah. So I guess I started from the ground up. I was doing a little bit of juggling and manipulation, and then a bit of acrobalance. Both, I was learning both of those at the same time. I was mainly doing what we call staff twirling. So when you put fire at either end, so staff twirling and poise. So I pretty much started with fire. And because I was in a university art college, we had access to heavy machinery, so we could make our own fire juggling equipment. So that's what I did. And apparently I picked it up really quickly. And then by the end of that year, there was a big art event going on throughout Cardiff and also in my art college, and we were doing juggling fire on the roof of Howard Gardens building, which that building is closed now, but I can officially say I've twirled fire on a university building roof.
So did it actually make you change direction from doing the fine art course? Did you then go, right, the circus is for me, or did it take a bit longer than that?
No, that didn't really cross my mind. I just did both at the same time. And it was still more like I wouldn't exactly say it's a hobby. I think hobby is something you do once in a while and you really enjoy it. It was a little bit more than that. So I guess it was a bit of an obsession. And I just ended up doing both. So I didn't think I was not doing my university thing or taking a different angle. I just thought I was doing both things at the same time. Most people go to a tea shop and they go, should I have that cake or should I have that one? My personality is, oh, I'm going to have that and the other one tomorrow. So pretty much that's what I did.
Right. And so how did that, did you do classes? How did you keep the circus thing going?
The circus thing going, I still kept going to the one evening thing a week that Norfolk, that Splot and Landscape had going on. So while they were still in spots, I was there with them once a week. And while I graduated, I was working with I was still doing what I trained to do, which is to work in the arts. Well, the creative painting and making part of it. I was working with an artist as his assistant, doing arts and craft. We go somewhere, we'll do making, music and dance or movement. And so I'll do that, and then when I come back, I'll still be doing the arts and craft.
So with Splot on the Landscape, what can you tell me about that?
Splot on the Landscape, so what, the show in the new theatre? Oh, so at some point, while I was doing the one day a week drop-in thing of juggling and things like that, I also learned to do stilts walking. I learned to walk on what we call durastilt, which you can stand still on, and Chinese stilts, which is just the pegs. So I learned those both at the same time. Some people learn one and the other. I learned it both at the same time. At the same time, we were learning to make it as well. At the same time, I was learning to walk on it, on the durastilts and the peg stilts. I was also, it was the summertime, and we were in the Cardiff Carnival. And so I had a lot of good teachers. So I just learned both those times. And then at the end of that, I started to do more stilt gigs, like fundraisers, really. Teddy Bear Picnic and stuff like that, that Norfolk State would be involved in. And then at some point, Norfolk State said, oh, we've got a thing in the bay. And that was my first gig. We've got a stilt gig in the bay. We've got a costume for you. We've got the stilts. You just have to bring an invoice. I was like, what's an invoice? So that was the first time I got paid to do it. And at that point, it was still just a fun hobby to do. And then at some point, about a year later or 2 years later, Norfolk State said, oh, we have a trapeze class lesson. And you can do it, Kevin, but since you have no money, you're a graduate, and you've helped us raise money for Children's Hospice and Norfolk State and Splot State, you can do it for, I think it was £10. Yeah.
As opposed to,
I would say, it was about a month or 2 months, and a month worth of trapeze classes, I would say, would go up to 10. To go up to about 60 quid at a time. So it was really, really good. So I got an intense trapeze class for a month or two. And at some point, maybe a couple months later, they said, oh, we're taking our spaceship tent on tour. Would you like to audition for a trainee during the tour? And I auditioned and I got in.
And which show was that for?
That was for Immortal Zero. Immortal 2. So they did Immortal Zero in the park, and then they finally took the tent on tour, and that was me with them. And I think it was after that when we came back to Cardiff for the Christmas or summer show, we did Splot on the Landscape in the new theatre. And that's the first time I did a character called Mr. Smooth and the Splotettes. So it was me, my, and two other friends, and one of them was my girlfriend, and she was the one who was doting over me, and the other one was like, oh my God, what's that? And so I arrived as Mr. Smooth with a big afro, and then they'll be on the stage as the Splotettes, and we do like a three people on a rope aerial piece, which apparently was really funny. So...
have you got any footage of that? That would be really good.
I don't have the footage. There's quite a few people who have it, but I haven't seen it. There's loads of footage, apparently, of me, but I haven't seen it.
Well, watch the archive space. We'll get that on there and you'll be able to see it or something. Sure. But so how did it compare going from the new theatre where you did that show with actually going on tour in the spaceship tent and all that with Immortal? Was it a big leap that you had to do to get into the idea of touring and going and doing something like that, quite hectic and different places?
Not really. To me, I found it quite easy. I think a lot of people, they didn't find it easy. I think it's because they were good. When we did the traineeship, there was 12 of us. Two of us had never been to circus school. Everybody else has. And if you have been studying something for 3 or 2 years, you get set in your mind of how things might be after you leave. And that wasn't set for me in stone, whereas other people it was. And they'd already got the discipline of a particular equipment, whereas I had already been doing everything and I wasn't set on an equipment yet, so therefore I was still open for everything. So for some people it's like, oh, we want you to be on the rope now, and they were like, oh, I haven't really done rope, I may need this, and it was hard for them, whereas me it was like, yeah, I've had a go at everything and it's still new to me, so I'm not set. I guess for some people it's like driving a car and the steering's on the left or the right. To me it didn't really matter at that time.
Was your experience of actually doing it then, did you have a preconceived idea what it'd be like?
No, I just remind myself that whatever it is, just presume it's going to be hard. And that way you go, okay, yeah, this is hard as I thought it was going to be. The hardest part was surviving the rain and mud. Because the first rehearsal was in Wales, and it was just the time of year that we started rehearsal to be ready for summer. We had to start in winter, or the tail end of winter. So
February-ish.
So. Yes, and April showers. We had April showers as well. So we were just, everything was mudlogged. People were, for the first time, like me, buying a caravan, having no idea what to look for in a caravan. And so that was a nice thing. You had to buy this caravan, and you had no experience of buying a caravan. And someone who has, like Ali, came with you. So that was really nice. That someone came and then they look at it with you and you kind of go, okay, yeah, maybe that. You would have made a list already and gone this one or this one, and you choose one and go see it. And if you liked it, we took it there and then.
So have you still got that caravan that you bought?
No, British caravans are not designed for the British weather, unless you live in it. If you're living in it, you keep it warm and it doesn't start to crack on the outside. But then if you park it up during the winter and you go to your normal house, the weather just cracks, the snow goes on top, it melts, freeze, and then it cracks the ceiling, the weight collapses in.
Oh,
yeah, so my caravan was pristine and fantastic, even though it was second hand or third or fifth, it was great. By the next summer, it wasn't great. But now we stored our stuff in a lockup with a roof, and my caravan, the one I had last time, lasted three, four years, I think maybe five. Whereas my first caravan lasted a year and a half.
So moving on from that tour with Immortal then, what was the next stage?
I think it was, they pretty much have Immortal. And then we did, was it Taboo and stuff? So it was nice. The thing I liked the most was we, all of us, from the ground part of starting with Immortal, we weren't really actors. But there was already one particular actor already there, and you kind of bounce off him how to do it. And the director had a smart idea of using a book to base the show on, because we all read the book, and then it got us into that mental state of how to be with each other. I liked the first tour because there were so many of us, you had time to do your act and you had time to bump into another character and you could wheel and deal. We had a scene where while the big spectacle was going on, we had a little bit of moment where one person's pushing a pram and she's selling things out of the pram, and sometimes it looks really dodgy, sometimes it didn't. And the people, you're honestly watching the show, the big main spectacle, and out of the corner of the eye, they see a bit of wheeling and dealing going on from the baby pram. And it felt really nice. And they had loads of moments like that of character crossing. I gave my shoes to one of the characters at the start of the show, and then I had to find him to get it. And then I saw him hammering nails into my shoes, which I didn't have to wear throughout the whole show. But there's loads of moments of that, of note passing the thing. But the tour is really, really hard. It's really, really hard.
After that, then, what was the next stage? Did you go on the tour the next year?
Yes, I've done 6 years of touring. So from Immortal, 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 and Tabu Tabu and Bianco. I was there for the first Bianco when they made it in Cornwall in the Eden Project. And I was there for half of the tour, I think, in a touring tent the next year. Because there was a one point near to the end of near to the end of Tabu, we had an extra month, and they asked us, "Do we want to do it?" I went, "Yes." And then they said, "Oh, we have another extra month or so. Are you available?" And I said, "I really can't this time." I said, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Yes." And I said, "I bought a house, and I haven't seen it. The only thing I've seen of my house that I've bought was photos." And everyone was like, "Really?" So I had to come back to Cardiff to look at my new mortgage or something I'd never actually seen.
So that was like a big turning point. You've done the touring, and then, you know, you've done well, and you had enough money to get a house. And so now it was like time to actually stop doing the touring a little bit.
Yeah, but I was still touring after we got the house. It was more like the fact of I had a baby boy, but we took him with us on tour. Because at the time I had a high top van, and we had a caravan. So to tour a little child on tour is quite difficult, but easy in parts, because you're not. Work is just a couple of steps outside the door, so that's quite nice. And
was it a good place to take to children? Were there other children?
Yeah,
around?
There was loads. There was loads.
Yeah,
there's. There's that moment where my partner's like, she has Theo, and I'm like, "Oh, I need to go for a week." And then you realise there's somebody there who can hold the baby. It's like, and you also, it's quite hard, because it's not like sometimes if the kettle is not working or the tap is not working, it's a real hard work. And so you kind of miss your home for that. But then for stuff like, otherwise, I would be locked in at the house with the baby, and I can't get out. Whereas everybody else could come to you, and they're just by you, so it's quite nice. And there was like 3 months difference between all the kids.
So how many do you have?
I have two, but the other kids within the circus group, there was 6 months difference. So there was clothes passing down constantly.
Can I have 5 more minutes?
Four.
Okay. Restarted. Before we move on to what you're doing now, can we just sort of do a background thing of what your family thought about this? You went off to university to do fine art, and then suddenly, all of a sudden, but it wasn't all of a sudden, but now, you know, you're part of the circus community, a very different world. So was that a shock to them? Did they see,
No, it wasn't a shock to them. I don't think I told my mum fully about what, all the stuff that I was doing. Not even about, as soon as I graduated, actually, I was already working in the arts as soon as I graduated. I think I was one of the lucky ones. A lot of people graduate and then they just do nothing. And some people go find a different angle into the arts, and some people do exactly what they've trained to do, be it painting or sculpture. I was still working in painting. I was still working in arts and craft parts. I was lucky.
Did that make it worse then? If you came out of university, you had a job all of a sudden, and then you were going, "Well, actually, Mum, I might want to go and run off and join the circus here."
No, because I was doing both at the same time. So it's not as if I'd said, Mom, I'm going to stop doing this, and I'm going to look for this now. And then between stopping one thing and starting another, there's a gap of nothing. And luckily, I was doing both at the same time. And by the time I ran away with the circus, there was no stop gap. There was no gap year. There was no, I'm not working for this amount of time. I was straight into it. Mm. I didn't tell my mom how my work-wise job was going when I left uni. I think she just knows that I was working, really.
Did she understand what sort of contemporary circus was? Or did she have a view of the old-fashioned circus, maybe? Or?
I didn't tell any... I told my brother about the circus stuff I was doing. I was in the drop-in thing. And then I think I told my little brother. And my mum knew about some of the circus stuff I did. but I didn't say I was with a touring show yet. I think it was, it's a bit like getting a new backflippy trick. You don't really tell people because you don't think you have it yet. And if you can do it once or twice, you don't think you have it. If you can be consistent, then you go, yeah, I can do that trick. Until then, you kind of go, someone will go, oh, you're a circus performer. And I go, no, I'm not. And then it was, I think it was only after the, near to the end of the first year, I go, yes, okay, yes, I'm a circus performer.
Can you remember sometime your family came along to the show for the first time and went, wow, that was amazing?
I think I invited my mom to the third year of Immortal. And then by that time, I was the one of the people doing the main rope piece. And then she came to see that. And she hadn't really, I hadn't really warmed her up to the fact of how high I'm going to be and how long I've been training it. So I'm completely safe. So when she saw it, she was like, she was quite wow. But she was also typical parent going, that's quite high. Are you okay? That's quite high. Yeah. Yeah.
And does she come along to shows now?
Yeah, she liked it. The first time my mum came to see the show was in London, and everyone loved her visiting because she bought me some rice and peas and chicken and quite a lot. So I ended up feeding a lot of people during the middle of the night. So they keep wanting her to come back, especially with the Jamaican cake, which we can't have before we do a show due to the content of rum and wine that's in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Is there any cultural thing that you've found? Because is it very sort of white middle class kind of circus world in Britain?
There's not that many black people within the circus. And it took a while for that to dawn on me, because when you're walking around and there's not that many, and then suddenly you're in a context of circus and there's still not that many, it doesn't dawn on you until you go, oh yeah, there isn't. It feels too normal. Really, which is really a shame. But and I see a lot of talented people as well, whatever background they are, and you kind of know that all you have to do is encourage them physically, encourage them confidence-wise, and they'll be able to do anything. The hardest thing with the youth circus is when they're doing an act or the trick, and you ask them to look forward, they can't look forward, they can't make eye contact with anyone. And I know we're teaching them circus and skills and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, we're actually just teaching them confidence. Forget about the tricks, we're just teaching them confidence. We're kind of going, before you do the trick, you can look at your audience in the eye, I know you're going to be okay, and then you do the trick, and you look at them, but they don't look at the audience because they think what they are inside isn't good enough. And then when they do their trick, they still don't think the trick is good enough or them inside, and they still don't look at you. So we kind of try to break them out of that. Go, you're fine. If it goes wrong, we're with you. You remember when you watch gymnastics on TV, when someone falls, the whole crowd is with that person who gets back up. But until then, they just look at the floor.
So how did that evolve then, you actually teaching circus then? How long ago?
I've always taught, I think, while I was doing stuff, I've always thought, but I got to run and go back to open house because we're in rehearsal now. This is day 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is day 8. Well, 5 more days and then a show.
There it is. Thank you so much for your time, your precious time, and that was brilliant. Thank you.